Hello and welcome back to the second edition in our third season of the Colts Corner podcast. We are in our brand new broadcasting room. We are really excited and we're ready to go. On the schedule today, we'll talk about Hills West Sports, the NFL, Jets huge win. We know Ben and Brian love that. College football and our moments and players of the week. Two different segments. We're excited to go. Let's do it. It is an outstanding time for sports here at Hills West and in the professional level. We are ready to go. I'm Doug Latuca, Brian Flatow right here, Benjamin Dixon, and Mike Garofa is our producer. We are stoked to be back for the second edition of the 2018 Colts Corner podcast. So right off the bat, we're going to talk Hills West sports, and they're still crushing it.
Yeah, the football team, 1-0, big win. Me and Brian were there at I was on the turf against West Babb, 34-7 win. Shut them out through three quarters. West Babylon was held under 50 yards of total offense. It was a heavy rushing attack. Gerald was only 3 for 5 in the air with 48 yards and a touchdown to Davon. Justin Brown had a monster game on the ground with 9 rushes, 133 yards, and 3 touchdowns. And Joey Venezia had 3 sacks and an interception on defense. So, yeah, that was a big show out on Saturday. Great to see Hills West open the season up with a big win.
Yeah, the standout performer for me in that game was definitely Justin Brown. Watching that game from the stands, I could tell he was on another level that day. He had 170-yard run in the we left right after in the fourth quarter. We knew it was all over, and it was he's my standout player of the week for that game. Definitely played a very, very great game.
And if you tuned into our first episode of this season, you could see that we were pretty spot on with outstanding players on that roster. So, of course, we are the number one spot for all Hills West sports as we're outlining it right here on our podcast. We're going to move over to soccer, boys and girls, but boys to start, who are off to an outstanding start as well.
Yeah, 4-0-1, big 4-1 win under the lights at Eastport South Manor last night. Brian and I were at the game last Friday, I think it was. It was a 3-1 win over West Babb. That was a pretty good game. But yesterday, just want to shout out those goal scorers in the 4-1 win. Isaac Knott, Marcus Legarra, Casey Brugna, and John Mergoli. The next game is home tomorrow at home tomorrow versus Harbor Fields at 4:30 on the grass. And pop out to that one. Should be a good one.
Yeah, I will definitely be in attendance. I love going to these soccer games, right? They're so entertaining. You know, watching them play at a level that's similar to the way that they were playing last year at the end of the year, I could see. It's really fun to watch. In that game I was at last week, goals by Andrew Buncis, goals by Marcus Frazier. It was a great game and very, very fun to watch. Very happy that I'll be able to see it again tomorrow.
Just great to see them pick up right where they left off last season. Over to the girls' soccer field, they started off 3-0. They've really played extremely well.
I think it's 4-0 now, right?
It is 4-0, yes. I've been to most games. My sister's on there, Zoe Latuca, shout out. But
That's two family shout outs in 2 weeks.
Yes, a lot of shout outs for Latucas. I just got to get my mom on there. She'll get there eventually.
Next week.
Just really great team soccer. The passing is really stellar. Carly Bloom actually has a hand injury, if we're doing an injury report here. Jordan Levy has been really, really solid at the forward position. She could have 5 goals a game. The girl, she has at least 10 shots on goal every game. And the goalkeeping has been solid defensively. They're really a great unit back there. And they won yesterday at Hampton Bays. Jordan Levy, as I said, she had 2 goals and 2 assists. They're outscoring their opponents 28-2 in the 4 games that they've played. Their next game is home against Southampton.
That's pretty remarkable. You'll expect to see a story on them sometime soon, whether it be on the website, the print. We'll be talking about them more on the podcast at the bare minimum. So we'll keep that going. They deserve the coverage. They're a pretty great team. So
it's been awesome seeing vast improvement since last season. Last season, I remember they had a little bit of a down year, and this year they're just back and better than ever. And it's really fun to watch.
Yeah, it just seems like they're having a lot of fun out there. The team led by Lindsay Wright, Olivia Meserol, they just seem like they're in good spirit. as a unit, gelling well together, and just putting the ball in the net. The girls' volleyball team starting off 1-1. They beat West Islip, and they played a close game against East Islip, who actually beat them pretty badly last year. I know you guys were in attendance for some of those games and have some stuff there.
Yeah, I was at the win against West Babylon, and I have to say, the whole team looked great, but standing out was definitely Toby Alper. She looked awesome in that game, playing the entire rotation all the way around, and it was just awesome seeing her get hits, passes, sets, everything you could possibly think of in the sport of volleyball. She looked awesome out there.
Yeah, I mean, you covered it all. Next game, 17th versus Harborfields. Quote from Toby Alper, should be a close one.
It's been great to see how well these teams are doing this year, and I think it'll lead to a nice ending to their season. We might be seeing a few championships, and I think it'll be a fun fall season to kick off the year.
Yeah, I'd really love to cover a live broadcast of volleyball.
You know, I kind of want to do a lot of these sports.
I think that would be really incredible.
I agree, Doug. We're going to make it happen.
Because we're looking to expand here at West Radio, West TV, the whole thing. We're trying to expand, and I think
covering the girls' soccer games, even getting to the boys' soccer games too.
Well, we got the booth up there.
Got a plan.
On the turf. I mean, that's
get out there.
That's prime real estate right there. That's beautiful stuff.
I think you can book it.
So Hills West Sports off to a great start. We'll move to the NFL.
I think we know where we're starting.
Copyright.
Right?
Oh boy.
Darnold. He's the savior, man. He's just different. I don't know. I mean, I'm not gonna go all the way and say he's a savior, but I think we found our franchise. I'm a Jets fan, so I'm gonna say our Doug says our with the Steelers all the time, and I'm sure many of our listeners are Jets fans too. I mean, that first play, that pick six.
Oh.
I mean, the play call extremely questionable, but my head was in my hands for the next 5 minutes until we scored again. But really, after that, what they were saying about Darnold when we drafted him, the big thing is his poise. Is that he'd throw a pick six and he'd get back out there and he'd throw a touchdown the next play. So, I mean, really, Darnold looked great. The defense looked unbelievable. Five picks. And, Brian, I'm just going to let you take it from here. I know we're both pretty excited about this one.
I am psyched. I think it's awesome that the Jets, looks like they finally found a franchise quarterback. Darnold looked awesome in that game. I don't care that he threw the pick six because he bounced back. And that's such a big deal to me. I think that really shows the poise that all the scouts were talking about. Really shows that it's there with them. The arm talent we knew was there. We knew he was had decent mobility, able to evade the pass rush, get out of the pocket, and make the throws. We saw that on some plays to Quincy Enunwa, who I love in this game. He looked awesome. Looks like him and Darnold have developed a real connection. The run game, Crowell and Powell, it's a great 1-2 punch that they have back there with Powell as the receiving back and Crowell as more of a power back, even though Crowell had a 70-yard touchdown run in that game. It looked awesome also. And the defense, I can't say enough about the defense. Turning over Matt Stafford, who didn't look good in the game, but is still Matt Stafford. They turned him over. The defense had five picks. Stafford threw four of them. And Darren Lee, Jamal Adams, Mo Claiborne, Jermaine Johnson. Yep, everyone looked awesome in that game. And I can't be more thrilled for hopefully what we're going to see more of this in this season.
Yeah, one last thing about that Jets game is that the X factor in that game was the pass rush, whether we were going to get to Stafford. And we did. Or the Jets did. I'm sorry for keep saying we. I was very excited.
It's a normal sports term.
And
thank you.
Credit goes out to Henry Anderson. Jets fans may have not knew him before that game or before the season. I mean, they traded for him in the draft. I think they gave up a seventh rounder to the Colts. They love his upside. He had a great game against the Lions. Got to Stafford. And one last thing, Jets fans, please temper your expectations. This isn't the year.
It's true.
There's a lot of upside. The future's bright. It should be bright. But come on. Let's temper the expectations.
I'm not by no means expecting to see a 12-4 season where we go out and we make the playoffs or anything like that. I'm expecting to see maybe around 8-8, 7-9. That'll be awesome. I'd be so happy to see that. And just the number one thing I'm looking for this season is defensive progression and Darnold to look the way they did after throwing that interception. That's what I'm looking for this season as a Jet fan.
Keep everyone healthy too.
Yeah, I think you would be really excited if you guys can go 8-8 coming in. Expectations, don't really know where you guys were at, but after the first game, Lions really disappointing. That was really embarrassing, honestly.
I have to say, I'm not so surprised about that. I did not think Matt Patricia would look. I never thought Matt Patricia was fit to be a head coach, and I think that's he'll be done after this year.
Matthew Stafford was extremely disappointing. I mean, almost embarrassing.
They made him the highest paid quarterback in NFL history at the time, and he really just didn't look good. He looked like an average quarterback. Darnold was the one who looked like the veteran, and Stafford looked like the rookie, if you ask me.
Well, good for the Jets. I hope it continues for you guys. My team, tied to the worst team in the league. They haven't They hadn't won a game in 600-plus days, and they still haven't, but they tied us. So I'm okay with it. Steelers, that might have been the worst game I've ever seen played by an NFL team. A lot of turnovers, penalties on the road, and they still did not lose. They don't have a loss in the loss column. You got a tie. So
you're a 500 team, right?
Yeah, you're at 500. Ball club. So NFL week two coming up. We're excited for that, but we're going to move into the college football level and talk games.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the games this week were either pushed up or canceled. Schedule got started yesterday. There's some games tonight. But I just want to take the time now for anyone who's affected by Hurricane Florence. I mean, I know it's really not anyone here, but I know my grandparents.
Our South Carolina listeners.
My grandparents are in town. They're from Virginia, and, you know, it could affect that area. Brian, your brother, goes to Virginia. So just anyone, if you know anyone affected by Hurricane Florence, we're just sending our best to him. And we'll move to the actual football side of things. Pretty good season so far. 2 weeks in, a lot of entertaining games. I'm excited for this weekend. Doug, I know you're seeing the Syracuse-Florida State game.
Yes, I am. I'll actually be taking a trip up to Syracuse, looking at that beautiful school.
It's beautiful.
Both my parents went there, and hopefully that the tradition continues there. I'd love to go to that school. You know, and we're going to have a great football game, too. FSU, great program, usually very solid.
Not so much this year.
Not
so
this year, but they usually have a very good program.
It's still Florida State.
They almost lost to Samford last week, you've probably never heard of. Samford is an FCS program, which is Division 1A.
Division 1A.
Division 1AA, sorry. FBS is Division 1A. Really not a great performance from FSU. I'm sure they'll be angry going into Syracuse, but as of now, Syracuse is the better football team.
Should be a fun time. Looks like weather around...
It's in the dome.
I know, low 80s, though, at the school, which is rare. It's usually snowing there
freezing.
And freezing. So I'll take the nice weather in that dome. I've never been there.
I have.
So I'm kind of excited to get there. How was that for you?
It's nice. It was fun. It was freezing. I went in April.
Yeah.
It was freezing cold.
And the Newhouse School.
Yeah, the Newhouse School. I'm really excited.
Gonna have your eyes on that.
Yeah, I want to see how that looks, and hopefully I have a future there. But we'll see how it goes, and I'm stoked.
Yeah, just want to spotlight a few games this weekend with college football playoff implications. Washington, which was the Pac-12 favorite, they're now ranked 10th in the country. They're going to Utah for a late-night game in 10 p.m. on ESPN. It's a huge one for them and the Pac-12's playoff chances. Ohio State's traveling to Texas to play TCU. It's Urban Meyer's last game that I'll miss with this three-game suspension, which I really don't agree with, but don't have time to talk about that now. USC at Texas. Texas has been disappointing. Alabama's going to Ole Miss to play there. Ole Miss not eligible for a bowl this season, but they're still pretty talented. Put up a lot of points.
And with a history of beating Alabama.
Yeah.
One of the few teams that's beaten them in the last 5 years.
Yeah, nothing to lose. They'll be fired up for that one. And the last game we're going to talk about is Boise State, not Power 5 school, 17th in the country. Traveling to Oklahoma State, who's ranked 24th. That should be a dandy.
One of the things I heard about Boise State is they're a group of five teams. So usually a group of five teams are going to make a non-playoff BCS Bowl, or it used to be called BCS Bowl, but a non-playoff power bowl, a very good bowl game. But this year I hear Boise State has a decent shot at the playoff if they can win every game.
Yeah, we'll see. Also, one more game I forgot, LSU at Auburn. It's probably the game of the day. Just glanced over that one on the schedule. That's at 3:30 on CBS. Number 12th ranked LSU at number 7 Auburn. Should be a great one.
You know what I really enjoy? The late night when you're in bed watching sports, a fresh new game on at around 10 o'clock out on the West Coast. You get the Pac-12.
Yep.
I mean, for both college basketball and college football, it's just nice, you know, to have a live game on. I don't want to watch
conference
recaps.
Champions.
I don't want to watch that. I want to watch some real sports here. So you get... see a little bit of Pac-12 football at night. I really enjoy that, you know? Seems nice.
Great stuff.
My boy, Bill Walton, shout out. Love that guy.
Yep. Yeah.
Love that guy on the college.
Once again, Conference of Champions.
I really love that guy.
Yeah.
He has a nice
presence.
We'll talk about him more as college basketball season approaches.
Yes, but right, I just had to give him. I was talking to him with Ben, and I just think he's really electric on the broadcast. So that's just going to move us right into the electric factory, where we're going to talk about our electric player of the week. Benjamin Dixon, let's hear it.
We got a former Jets legend, maybe not a legend, but Ryan Fitzpatrick. We'll have to see this guy succeed. The Harvard man going into New Orleans, picking up a big win. I think they were 9.5-point underdogs. Jeez. 10, maybe wrong. Fitzpatrick, 21 for 28, 417 yards in the air, 4 TDs, no interceptions, and also adding 36 yards on the ground and a rushing touchdown. So pretty impressive performance for Fitzpatrick. And, I mean, you know, I don't think anyone expected Tampa Bay to win. New Orleans was a popular survivor pick in survivor pools. But, yeah, Fitzpatrick looked unbelievable. He'll start the next 2 weeks while Winston's suspended. Maybe won't give that job up, but that's a discussion for another time.
Oh, Fitzmagic. He was outstanding. Yeah, he had a great game. Love to see that.
Yeah, so Fitzmagic over for Tampa Bay. For me, I had the Cheetah. Tyreek Hill.
Wow.
Definitely for the Kansas City Chiefs. First of all, watching that game, he was dominant, especially the connection he seems to have developed with Patrick Mahomes over there. And from a numbers standpoint, 7 catches, 169 yards, two receiving touchdowns, and he added a punt return touchdown for 91 yards. He was just awesome that game. The Cheetah was in full effect, and I'm very excited to see more of that this season.
Yeah, peace out, Cheetah. You'll love to see that. One of my favorite fantasy players, my boy, wide receiver on the New Orleans Saints, Michael Thomas. He had 16 receptions for 180 yards and a touchdown. Huge performance there, really continuing his connection with Drew Brees. And the Saints' offense was outstanding as well. Just Tampa Bay. I was almost shocked.
I was shocked.
It's nice to see, though, because I do like Fitzpatrick a lot, just as a player. Really like a gritty quarterback. He'll get you that extra 2 yards. He'll put his head down and get you that first. So I like to see him have success, and that was a good game out there. But Michael Thomas, my electric player of the week. We're going to move into our new segment. Garofa, did you have an electric player?
I did.
I'm very
yes.
sorry, sir.
That's all right. So sticking with a little bit of Tampa Bay, but moving over to baseball, my electric player of the week is the rising Cy Young candidate in the American League, Blake Snell.
Yes.
He has been absolutely fantastic for those Rays, and he has been probably the reason why they have done so well in the stretch. And they are looking to really get into that wild card spot. Yes, they're a few games out, but they're really making a push, and Blake Snell's been great for them. He pushed 7 no-hit innings yesterday. He's 2-0 in the week, and it's just been a very great stretch for Blake Snell in these Rays.
So Blake Snell getting some looks at an AL Cy Young possibility. Definitely there. He's been really stellar. Looks like a future star in the league. We're going to move over to our new segment here in 2018, the moment of the week. We will all go around, decide which we'll tell you guys our moment, and we're excited for this segment. So Ben
Ooh.
Dixon, yeah, we got
Spotlight.
Some new sound effects. I really love it.
Put me on the spot here. All right, we're gonna go Aaron Rodgers, the greatest quarterback that I have ever seen. They go down 20-0. I get an alert on my phone that the guy is out for the season with a leg injury, or not out for the season. Got carted off. I mean, when you see someone get carted off with a leg injury, you instantly think out for the season. I turn on the game. The guy comes back. The guy comes back in, throws 3 TDs, 21-20 win for the Packers. And man, what a talent that guy
is. Can we say it together? He's a bad man.
Do my best Stephen A impression here. That Aaron Rodgers is a bad man.
Yes, he is. So my moment of the week, but he's a cancer survivor, James Conner. He had cancer 1 year at the University of Pittsburgh. He's managed to become a great running back at the University of Pittsburgh. Was a rookie in the NFL last year, drafted by the Pittsburgh Steelers. Didn't get much playing time because he was behind Le'Veon Bell. But now Le'Veon Bell with this holdout situation, James Conner comes in. My moment is he scores his first touchdown. But wow, did he have a great day aside from that. He added another touchdown on 31 carries. He had 135 yards rushing. He added 5 catches for 57 yards. They may have missed Le'Veon Bell from a scheming standpoint, but from a running standpoint, James Conner was there, and that seems awesome to me.
Huge performance for my boy James Conner. My moment of the week, Serena Williams at the U.S. Open. She played in the women's championship game. She was looking for for another title there. She had first, she received a warning for getting coaching. Then she received the second warning for slamming her racket, which I disagree with completely. I should be allowed to slam as many rackets as I want. If I'm angry at myself, I'm paying for my own rackets, or I'm getting sponsored with rackets. So I don't think that that was appropriate. But she got the warning because of the original warning for being coached. And then she had the full, I believe it's called, she had the full game given to the other player in that championship, which you don't ever see, which was very rare, for calling the umpire a thief. Which is a little, that's embarrassing by the umpire. I understand the action, but I think it's a little weak. And now some of the umpires are actually protesting umping her games. Serena Williams at that U.S. Open.
Well, about that whole situation, the person I really feel bad for is the girl who won, the 20-year-old Naomi Osaka. I don't know if I'm saying your name
right. I believe you're right.
From Japan. And, you know, she was looking forward to playing Serena. She idolized Serena, and she won. She was going to win either way without the game, but she really didn't want it to happen that way, and it shouldn't have happened that way. So,
yeah, you could just see her in the interview afterwards. She was sort of shell-shocked, a little bit almost.
She told the crowd to stop booing.
Yeah, she's almost embarrassed.
Serena.
That was very classy move by Serena, tell the crowd to stop booing, because she understands how much work is put in to win, especially to beat her. I mean, she's a top athlete in the world. She is getting up there in age, though, and new players have to take over. So you love to see this young woman come in and defeat her. Great match. Really felt bad for her. And great stuff.
Yeah, you're talking about the new players, Doug, the next generation. We're going to need that next generation soon for the Colts Corner podcast graduating. So
yes,
if you're interested,
good transfer.
Come and see us. Graffa, you can go with your spotlight moment of the week.
So we are now, I'm going back to Tampa Bay Rays baseball. So we have a very interesting situation that happened earlier in the week this week. The Rays had a very controversial call in the bottom of the ninth going against the NL Central leading Cleveland Indians. It was a 5-4 Indians lead, bottom of the ninth with two outs. Tommy Pham's up representing the winning run at the plate, and a very controversial call that could have been strike three, but ended up making him walk. I apologize. I said he was the winning run. He was actually the tying run. He walked to get on base. He got a single. He got
correct.
On base. Either
single.
Way.
Single. Beautiful.
He got on
love
base.
It.
All right. And then G-Man Choi.
My boy.
Coming out of great nowhere. Name. He comes up
shout
to the
Joe
plate.
Choi.
And
here
this,
it is.
This happens.
The only 141 against him this year. And Choi coming into the night just 1-15 against lefties. Swing and a high fly ball. Right field and deep. Guyer to the wall. Rays win. Rays win. Rays win.
So I just wanted to point, for the Rays, who were, as I mentioned before, they're surging right now. I think that that's absolutely incredible for them to have such an amazing moment. And all it takes in these playoff runs and these final stretches is one big moment to get your team going. And it could really propel you into a playoff spot. So I think that that could really help out the Rays there.
Yeah, I don't think the Rays will be making the playoffs or getting a wild card
neither.
Spot.
Great
but,
season,
but
though.
Kevin Cash does deserve manager of the year in my book, because the Rays were projected to be the last in the AL East. I was hearing 50 wins. They're going to win over 90 games, so it's pretty impressive.
It's really impressive, and as a Yankee fan, it almost hurts, but as they're in the same division. But if you look at that roster, it's not filled with a lot of big names. A lot of guys have stepped up. They go with the
opener.
The opener, who is a guy out of their bullpen starting the game for about two innings, and then they rely on their bullpen to finish the game out. So it was very highly criticized at the beginning of the season. Has really worked out there. A bunch of games over 500. It's really interesting to watch that team go. They're going to fall a little bit short of the playoffs, but for a team that was supposed to almost be one of the worst in the league, they've really done a nice job this season.
And one quick thing with that, in case you didn't know, just this isn't supposed to be a Mets thing, but Jacob DeGrom, who set the record for, he's continuing the record for most consecutive starts with three runs earned or less in a start. Ryan Stanek of the Rays is also at that exact same record right now, being an opener. He has 26 straight starts of allowing three runs or less, but the only thing is he has never pitched more than two innings in a start because he is an opener. So the question is, does that, if he keeps that going past DeGrom, will that still count as a record, or should it just be discontinued?
Come on, there should be an asterisk next to
it. That's embarrassing.
Good for that guy.
What DeGrom is doing right now is unparalleled, what I think, because with the lack of run support that he's getting, and he still goes out there every single game that he plays and for 26 straight starts, three or fewer earned runs. It's incredible. I don't think you could add an opener like that into his category.
Yeah, they're definitely not. They can definitely not be compared. But talk about DeGrom. That guy definitely deserves to win the NL Cy Young, because if you watch, we all play sports here. We watch sports, and when you see a team, especially baseball, where your team is not giving you run support, you see how stressful it is for a pitcher when they give up a hit. It's like, oh no, here we go again. I'm going to give up one run. I'm pitching eight innings, three hits, one run, and I'm still going to get the loss. So if just to see Jacob DeGrom pitch at such a high level over the season, keep his head up and continue to do what he does, he definitely deserves that NL Cy Young, even if his record is below 500.
And it's even been over his career. Around 50% of Jacob DeGrom's career starts, he's allowed one run or fewer, which is, that's unheard of. I mean, to allow around 50% of your starts one run or less, that's just incredible. You've never seen that before.
And this season in particular, what I've noticed from DeGrom is, watching the Mets very painfully, is that he often provides his own run support. It's happened on a few occasions, especially in the month of August. I noticed he has games where he'll put up an RBI and he'll take a one-nothing lead, and that's where his few wins are coming from, and that's when his no decisions are coming from. I think it's insane what he's doing this year. I think you have to give him a sign.
So let's think about this. Since Jacob DeGrom has contributed to himself on the offensive side, there's been a lot of talk about taking the pitcher out of the lineup.
Oh, my bad.
Here in the NL. What do we think here? If DeGrom is giving himself support...
Doug, that's one guy. The DH should be across baseball. AL, NL, World Series. Every game should have a DH in baseball.
It's just a question.
Pitcher shouldn't hit.
I dislike... No. I dislike the pitcher hitting. I think it's a joke. I think it's a wasting of a bat. I see the strategic area of it from a managerial perspective, especially pitching-wise. Working around a pitcher or just attacking him right there. But I think it helps the offensive side of baseball. It helps the viewership. Nobody wants to see a pitcher strike out on three pitches right down the middle. I don't want to watch this guy. There's only about a handful of pitchers that can actually hit.
Yep.
So there's a guy on every team that could be placed in that DH role. It also keeps guys in the league longer. It gives them a quote-unquote position as the bona fide DH, and I think it should definitely be implemented, especially in the National League.
I'm a fan of pitchers hitting. Actually, I think if you're in the game, I think you should be hitting, and I think that being a pitcher that can hit, like Jacob DeGrom, or especially Madison Bumgarner, he's the best one. We all talk about him when we think of it. I think it gives you such an advantage because now that's one more hitter than the other team. And if you're playing in the game, you should be playing both sides of the field. I'm all for pitchers hitting.
I get what you're saying, but this isn't high school baseball. This is the professional level, and I just think that they're looking for also viewers here in MLB. It's sort of plateaued here at about the same interest level. Has not went up, has not gone down, pretty much at the same exact level. So if you want to increase your viewership just a bit, I think getting rid of that useless, almost dead out in the lineup could definitely help run support.
Well, the one thing that I could say is I agree with you guys. I think they should have the DH, but the only thing is, I mean, you could do what the Giants did last year, or it was the year before, I don't know, when they put Bumgarner in the DH. You can always do that and just bat him ninth, you know. So if you want to have your pitcher really bat, if they're a good hitter, then you could always do that. But another thing, like you said, Doug, was that these guys make their careers being a DH. You got David Ortiz. You know him as a DH, and same thing with guys like Victor Martinez. They've been lifelong designated hitters, and that's the reason why they're still playing in the game. So it definitely does open up a few spots.
So keep him in the AL. I don't think there's a problem with that. I think there's enough DH spots in the AL for guys like that that are only going to be a DH to stay in the AL and for pitchers to hit in the NL. I think that's an okay situation that the MLB has going on right now.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just going to leave off with this, that these guys come to professional baseball and chances are they haven't picked up a baseball bat in years.
Yep.
So, I don't know.
And just think about...
It's definitely a debate, but I think that there should be a DH across baseball.
Think about the valuable nature of a pitcher, though, especially a starting pitcher. These guys are, you can't just pick them off trees. These guys are talents. You don't usually find even top three starters on each team. It's very difficult to come across a solid starting pitcher. So if they're going to be in the lineup, hitting, running the bases, it just increases the possibility of them getting injured. I always go back to Qingming Wang. Running home.
Slid in third base or was it home? I don't know. He slid into a base
and he got injured for the whole season. So it just hurts. And,
Tanaka was out for a few weeks this year.
It definitely hurts to see that, especially one of your most valuable players on your roster. So that's why I just believe that the DH should go across the whole league.
All right, boys. So a great episode. As always, we would like to thank the following people: Mr. Doxy, Mr. Ricciuti, Dr. Catapano, and the administration, the Board of Education, our audience who listens every Thursday. And finally, a very special thank you to the class of 2016 for their generous donation towards our podcast setup. And, you know, now our new broadcast room. We're excited to put that to use. I'm Ben Dixon alongside our always reliable producer, Mike Garafa, and Brian Flattow, Douglas Duca. We will see you next week.
Jet out.